Good evening, everyone. Can everybody hear me okay? Are we good? Yes, great. Welcome everybody, and the open source is in the house, which is great. It's wonderful to see so many open sourcers here. Great to have you all join us if you're not sitting in a retreat, and great if you are sitting in a retreat. It's wonderful to be teaching a multi-day retreat again with Sarah and Andrew and Megan. So thanks to you all, and the leaders have been just fabulous. So thanks so much for everything you're doing. So a quick caveat before I start, I'm doing my best to propitiate the Blue Dragon, but at this point, our Wi-Fi is down and I'm on a hotspot through my phone. It looks pretty good so far. If I disappear, I'll try to get back on. But if I don't, of course, it's up to the other teachers what to do next. But one thing I noticed that we've with no chance for discussion. So that's one way, you know, to go. Excuse me one second, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm getting lots of beeping sounds. It's okay for me, but are you all hearing beeping every time I hear a beep or not? Okay, that's great. All right. So here we go. Old Creek by Musa Soseki. Since before anyone remembers, it has been clear, shining like silver, though the moonlight penetrates it and the wind ruffles it, no trace of either remains. Today, I would not dare to expound the secret of the stream bed, but I can tell you that the Blue Dragon is coiled there. Like they say, a complete presentation of the whole. When I listen to the poem, it seems to evoke three different aspects of this whole. I'll talk about them in turn. So section one, beach balls. But let's not goof around right away. I'll get to the beach balls in a bit. The moonlight penetrates it, and the wind ruffles it. Glints of light on the water, shifting themselves as the moon slides through the sky, and maybe the clouds, if there are clouds, shift. And the wind makes ripples that play in and out of the current's movement, shifting the glinting water. Images the mind can trace following along. I'm reminded not just of Andrew's talk this morning, but also of another he gave at our Mahasangha retreat in Colorado, where he said he'd gone down to the creek and used a stick to write watery calligraphy, letters carried and dispersed on the stream, just like the moonlight and the wind. Mind and cosmos, as David Hinton suggests, dancing with each other, or dancing the same dissolving dance. The formless form, as Hakuin says, comes into form, but just barely, like a dream. Here's case 80 of the Blue Cliff record. A student asked Zhao Zhou, does a newborn baby have consciousness? Literally the sixth sense, which is consciousness. It has thoughts as its object. So does a newborn baby have consciousness? Zhao Zhou said, tossing a ball on rushing waters. The student went on to ask Tozi, what does tossing a ball on rushing waters mean? Tozi said, moment after moment, it never stops flowing. Thoughts and cosmos, everything goes as it goes, Shunryo Suzuki used to say. I've always seen the balls as beach balls. I'm not sure why. Maybe because in their lightness, they're super responsive, reflecting the shifting movements of the water without much resistance. Maybe because they're multicolored, now turning this way, now that, colors dancing around moment by moment. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Some other cones that want to drop by. Case two of the Blue Cliff record. Zhao Zhou taught, the greatest way is not difficult if you don't pick and choose. As soon as I speak, you'll think that's picking and choosing, or that's clear. But I don't identify with clarity. Can you live this way? A student asked, if you don't identify with clarity, what do you live by? Again, I don't know. If you don't know, why do you say that you don't identify with clarity? When you ask the question, you already have it. Make your bow and step back. Or another koan that gets right to the same gist. Abiding nowhere, let the heart mind come forth. Then there's the young Xiaozhou, who was a student this time, his teacher Nanxuan telling him, ordinary mind is the way. Excuse me, is that ordinary mind? Or some other kind of ordinary mind? Well, the whirlpools of obsession, the craggy boulders of resistance and rebound. At some point, the current will tend to carry it all along. Maybe there's a mantra that can help let the flow smooth a little bit, a regular flow of counted breath, or Xiaozhou's no, and that odd question as you flow along. What is this no, I wonder? But we can also just ride the stream. We're not too far from Wei Nung's famous poem here. So two is pebbly with stars. Since before anyone remembers, it has been clear, shining like silver. Though the moonlight penetrates it and the wind ruffles it, no trace of either remains. I like it that Wei Nung, illiterate, as the legend has it, became the sixth ancestor by winning a poetry contest. The head monk and Wei Nung wrote their poems on the wall. Actually, Wei Nung dictated his to a helpful monastic. But just for fun, what if we imagine the poems as written on water? Here's W.S. Merwin's translation of the poem by the head monk, Shenshu. The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is a clear mirror. Always keep the mirror polished. Let no dust get good keeping seem extra. The head monk's poem dissolving as it's written, leaving just the clear stream. Here's Wei Nung again in Merwin's translation. Bodhi has no tree. The mirror rests on nothing. From the beginning, not a thing is. Where would the dust alight? Might Wei Nung's poem serve as an image of the stream and the myriad glints and ripples it carries along? Or might it figure consciousness, sliding with the glints or bouncing along on the current? Well, as an old Zen saying has it, yes. So no need to bring rags and polish, no need to beat thoughts into submission to make them still or shoo them away so the stream can get clear. Here's Blue Cliff Record Case 80 again, the beach ball koan, from Yuan Wu's commentary this time. When you toss the ball onto swift flowing water, in the blink of an eye it's gone. As the Surangama Sutra says, looked upon from afar, swift flowing water is tranquil and still. And not only from afar, we can sense the stillness right in the flowing, in the glints and endless sliding downstream. For me, the stillness is sometimes easier to see if I sense what I tend to think of as different time signatures, different rhythms and speeds of movement. Rushing water, sliding light, birds darting quickly back and forth or trilling from branches, trees waving in wind, pebbles and boulders holding their slower rhythms. Then sometimes it feels like the rhythm underlying all of them, but also inside them, the slowest tempo, is stillness. Emptiness and absence slide forward through form and presence, then after a while slide back again, like the trick of the camera's shifting focus, foreground, background, in movies by Buddhist-inflected filmmakers. I can give you a list later if you want. Outside my window, Joan says in her Vimalakirti book, are subatomic particles pretending to be trees? The world isn't only a dream, but it is in part. How do we tend to a dream? There's an image in Hakuin somewhere of beating a cloth drum under the eaves. Like the eaves of a house, and the drum beats, maybe at night, sliding up and out from under that overhang into the big dark sky. So it's fine to beat the drum when you want to, into the vast silence. Stop the sound of that distant temple bell. Some other koans that come calling. What's the sound of one hand? In the Sea of Issei, 10,000 feet down, lies a single stone. I want to pick up that stone without wetting my hands. And here's Thoreau from Walden. Time is but a stream I go a-fishing in. I drink at it. But while I drink, I see the sandy bottom and detect how shallow it is. Its thin current slides away, but eternity remains. I would drink deeper, fish in the sky, whose bottom is pebbly with stars. We can rest here, or rather we always do. Full stop. Tickle? Tickle? Or, be that as it may, the Coens like to say, or, a specialty of Yuan Wu, maybe his favorite phrase, when you get here, you need a place to turn around. As Hinton reminds us, tranquility is one benefit of practice, one experience we have in meditation, but it's not the goal. Here's a line from Schwedo's otherwise lyrical poem for the great Every Day is a Good Day Coen, turning suddenly mordant. How lamentable is shunyata, emptiness. How lamentable is shunyata. Luckily, there's a dragon down there. So this is the last part, three dragons. Today, I would not dare to expound the secret of the stream bed, but I can tell you that the blue dragon is coiled there. But let's start with the floorboards. I know someone who, as meditation deepens, tend to notice something that feels spooky. It's like, he says, something is banging hard from underneath the floorboards. When he talks about it, it sounds like Freud's uncanny, something at once unknown, yet also paradoxically somehow deeply familiar. It can make the hair on the back of your neck, as Andrew, I think, said this morning, stand on end. Freud solves the riddle, though that doesn't make it feel any less uncanny. Deeply familiar, but also unknown? Well, duh, repressed. So what is it that's repressed but tends to return in meditation? It could be anything, something deeply personal and idiosyncratic, or some underlying cultural pattern, or something metaphysical. Quick sidebar. Oh, Jake, says the main character's not quite paramour, Brett Ashley, at the end of Hemingway's novel, The Sun Also Rises, we could have had such a damn good time. Jake's answer sounds flippant, mordant, and melancholy all at once. Yes, isn't it pretty to think so? So here's something pretty to think. An apple cart the knocking under the floorboards tends to upset. I'm a clean and proper self, as Julia Kristeva's English translators put it, a discreet, neatly bounded, and stable I. I'm the knower knowing the known. I'm a subject over here, and those are my objects over there. In short, I'm a self. I have a story. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. It's possible that guys tend to be slightly more committed to the story of the clean and proper self, the clean and proper body, than women are. Anyway, statistically, guys are the ones who tend to faint dead away in doctor's offices after injections and blood draws. Let's keep those boundaries good and secure. Thank you very much. I had a dream when I was 13 after my grandfather died. He was dressed in a nightshirt. There was a meat hook through the nightshirt, and suspended by it, he was hanging in a freezer, beckoning with his finger for me to come join him. I woke with a jolt. Freud says the ego can't dream its own death. Nonsense, some of my old Zenny friends used to say, I dream my death all the time. Here's Hinton on something called return, in his intro to his translation of the I Ching. The Tao Te Ching describes the way's most fundamental form as return. It says return is the movement of the way, and in them I watch the return, all things on and ever on, each returning to its root. Return, Hinton continues, is also spoken of essential in the I Ching, where there is a hexagram dedicated to it. The elaborations on this hexagram say, all return penetrating everywhere, things emerge and die back. And in return itself, you can sense the very heart mind of all heaven and earth. Maybe that's one version of what's under the floorboards, that endless weaving and unweaving we're made of. But what about dragons? Here's Hinton again. Primal emptiness separated into heaven and earth. That's how it all began. Before long, a pair of dragons emerged. Now, dragons in ancient China embodied the awesome force of change. A dragon was in constant transformation, writhing through all creation and all destruction, shaping itself into the 10,000 things, tumbling through their traceless transformations. We are descended from dragons. As it happens, there's also a dragon lurking in a koan we glanced at earlier, Blue Cliff 2, Zhaozhou's I don't identify with clarity, or in another translation, I don't abide in clarity. You might think this dragon emerged from under the floorboards. Let's begin with a little dance between Shuido's poem on the case and Yuan Wu's interlinear commentary. Shuido, beyond the balustrade, the mountains deepen, the waters grow chill. Yuan Wu, once dead, you don't return to life again. Shuido, when the skull's consciousness is exhausted, how can joy remain? In a dead tree, the dragon murmurs are not yet exhausted. Yuan Wu goes on. Later, a monk asks Shi Shuang, what are dragon murmurings in a dead tree? Shi Shuang said, still having joy. The monk also asked Shaoshan, what are dragon murmurings in a dead tree? Shaoshan said, the bloodline is not cut off. The monk asked, who can hear this? Shaoshan said, in the whole world, there is no one who does not hear it. The monk asked, what book is Dragon Murmurings taken from? Shaoshan said, I don't know what book it's from, but all who hear it die. Return. It's quite remarkable to think of all this underlying Zhaozhou's rather quiet, I don't abide in clarity, his version of Suzuki's everything goes as it goes. When you cast yourself loose on those waters, there are dragons down there. Here's a short koan that resonates for me with this aspect of the dragon. A student asked Baoshao Zhao, when everything comes forward and overwhelms you, what do you do? Baoshao answered, ignore it. The student bowed. I see that as a full prostration. The student bowed. Baoshao then said, don't move. If you move, it will break you in two at the waist. How might you present your response to that koan? But sometimes it feels like the dragon comes right up through you, so you're a conduit for those huge energies, not the target of their power or collateral damage. Think Andrew's comments on Wu Wei back in our Hinton series. In a similar spirit, here's a poem by Wallace Stevens, Nomad Exquisite. Meet here is M-E-E-T as in appropriate, not M-E-A-T, though the poet is likely enjoying the pun. And him is H-Y-M-N. Also, you might think of the poem's alligator as a little dragon. As the immense dew of Florida brings forth the big-finned palm and green vine angering for life, as the immense dew of Florida brings forth him and him from the beholder, beholding all these green sides and gold sides of green sides and blessed mornings meet for the eye of the young alligator and lightning colors, so in me come flinging forms, flames, and the flakes of flames. Two faces or phases of return. In Blue Cliff 22, Yunmen throws down his staff. Here's Yuan Wu's comment. The staff changed into a dragon and has swallowed the universe. Where are mountains, rivers, and the great earth to be found? But in Gateless Gate 48, Yunmen's got a fan. Yunmen held up his fan and said, this fan jumps up to the heaven of the 33 and strikes the nose of the deity Chakradevendra. Give a carp of the eastern sea one blow and the rain comes down in torrents. Blam! So the floorboards start knocking. There's something underneath that surges up and we get to ride it or suffer its force. The mystery's a mystery. The great way is easy. You just don't get to pick and choose. Finally, here's an actual blue dragon lurking in Shuedo's poem for Blue Cliff 3, Great Master Ma's Sun-Faced Buddha, Moon-Faced Buddha, aka Master Ma is unwell, dying actually. How many times have I gone down into the blue dragon's cave for you? This distress is worth recounting. John Tarrant links this moment to something else Matsu said. To advance from where you can no longer advance, to do what can no longer be done, you make yourself into a raft or ferry boat for others. I don't know if everyone who descends into the dragon's cave does so for the sake of others, but maybe we can be at least a little more useful to others if we risk this meeting. Just one more thing. If it's fun to think of Weinong's verse as written on water, I think it's also nice to think of Musō Suseki's poem as a hypertext, not a sequential narrative with stable beginning, middle, and end, but a space where you might slip from any one point to any other in the blink of an eye, or a Mobius strip, or a loop-de-loop. Sometimes it's dragons, sometimes the still crystalline stream bed. Sometimes you just follow the bouncing ball. Thank you. So I think we have some time for having a conversation. And again, we have three talks stacked up over the airport at this point. So if it's okay with Megan and Andrew, I think if anybody wants to ask or say anything that engages any of those talks, that would be great. Is that okay with you guys?
Sure.
And I'll try to look for hands and stuff, I guess, but if the wranglers want to help wrangle, that would be great. Thank you. I guess sometimes we also ask the other teachers if they'd like to chime in, just so that'd be fine too.